Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here in the studio with me today. Next is Buddy Halfiker, who is board president, executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And we'll be talking about the foundation, what it's working on, some upcoming events that you may want to attend, and talk about conservation efforts of the foundation. What are you doing to help conservation efforts? Do you have a question about managing your land? Questions about the Aldo Leopold Foundation? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Buddy Halfiker, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's always an honor to be here.
You know, I looked. We looked on the schedule. Jill Nadeau looked back and she said, "You know, it's almost a year to the day that you were last with it."
I think tomorrow would be a year. Would be a year celebration or ceremony or whatever.
Well, you know, Leopold always studied the phenological events and occurrences of the year, so maybe that's what this is. Every fall, I'm here to talk about conservation and the Leopold legacy.
Well, for those who aren't familiar with the Aldo Leopold Foundation, talk about, well, give us a little history. How was it formed and talk about its mission?
Sure. Well, it's great to be on the heels of John and Fritz and talking about Art Hassler. You know, the state of Wisconsin is really fortunate to have such a rich conservation heritage and tradition. Leopold being one of our more prominent conservationists, his fame is really arose from his publication of a Sand County Almanac, his book that has now been translated into 14 different languages and really speaks to people's relationship to the natural world. The foundation was established by his five children in the 80s, recognizing that his legacy was just continuing to grow. People were finding the book, finding their farm outside of Baraboo that inspired him to write the book. And so the foundation is in this really special place where we are the executor of his literary estate. So we help a Sand mm-hmm. County Almanac come out in new formats, in new languages. We did Green Fire, a documentary about Leopold and his life. And then we continue to manage his farm for ecological and wildlife purposes. And so we've now put that farm in a important bird area with partners all around us that's about 16,000 acres, and we're doing landscape scale ecological restoration and management.
And just for those who may not know where it's located, where is it located?
We're kind of sit almost a point within equidistance of Baraboo, Portage, and the Wisconsin Dells. And we're right on the Wisconsin River. Experienced a lot of high water recently from the Baraboo River backing up at the Wisconsin River. But we're just northeast of Baraboo or northwest of Portage.
So that is the major. Are there other properties that the foundation manages, or should I rather say, what properties do you manage?
So primarily, that's the one property that we manage. But that property now has been actively managed since the mid-30s when the Leopold family purchased the property. So in addition to doing the work ourselves, we're trying to share the lessons learned, best practices with other landowners all across the state. And one of the ways that we've done that is with partners through My Wisconsin Woods. It's a website, it's publications, it's a range of resources that are available for people who own land, want to take care of land, but don't quite know where to get started, or maybe are advanced land managers but want to take it to the next level or have new questions. So that's where, again, in Leopold's tradition, not only taking care of land ourselves, but helping others do the same.
What was, I'm sure you know the history of that particular farm, but what was that like when he bought the place?
Corn stubble and cockle burrs. It was really a worn out farm. He describes it as being left for dead. So we're in the sandy outwash plains of the Wisconsin River. That's where the title A Sand County Almanac comes from. Of course, those that are Leopold aficionados, there is no Sand County. Mm-hmm. There are the Sand Counties along the Wisconsin River, and we're in Sauk County, one of those. So we're on about 400 feet of sand, not particularly well suited for productive agriculture. So the landowner before Leopold had converted the property from prairie and savanna, tried to make a go of it, raising crops and livestock. He, during the Dust Bowl, failed and the Leopold family purchased the property from the bank on back taxes. So there was really not much there when they purchased the property.
And what did he, so he just started in and said, I'm going to convert this back to prairie? Or?
Well, I heard reference to the Arboretum in the last program. You know, Leopold started his career as a public servant with the Forest Service, managing large national forests in the southwest part of the country, came to Wisconsin to teach game management at the University of Wisconsin, the first course ever offered in the country. And he got interested in how, primarily at that point in time, farmers could care about wildlife, and if they cared about wildlife, improve their property to hold more wildlife. Well, then at the Arboretum, he began this really with his colleagues, a totally innovative experiment to see if they could reconstruct pieces of native Wisconsin, so prairies and savannas, hardwood forests, wetlands. And then that also happened at the same time in Coon Valley. They were working at a landscape level to try to restore that whole landscape because of severe drought and erosion. So Leopold was teaching students how to do this, helping the university actually restore land. But when he purchased his property, it was his chance to be responsible for doing this himself, kind of to practice what he preached is how I like to say it. And so I think he was really intrigued by this idea of how to take a piece of property that had been left for dead and bring it back to health. They started planting trees. They started planting prairie. And ultimately, the family totally transformed the landscape.
Yeah, it's an amazing place to visit, actually, and seeing his shack and the Leopold shack. And then what is there now is truly amazing.
Yeah, you know, quite a vision. And the other pieces of the puzzle I like to give him credit for, in addition to the vision, was persistence and patience. So the first 5 years, they would plant 3,000 trees a year, 1,000 white pine, 1,000 red pine, 1,000 jack pine. And with the drought still persisting in the upper Midwest, they had almost 100% mortality. But they came back out that 6th year and planted 3,000 more trees, and the climate began to change. They began to take, and now, as you described, Larry, when you go out to the property, you can really see the hand of the family and what they did to bring it back to health.
Yeah, it really is amazing. Well, so for people who do visit, what are the learning opportunities that are there? That's certainly a good, in and of itself, just seeing the land is amazing.
Yeah, so we have a range of activities and opportunities. There is seeing the historic site. It's now a National Historic Landmark, so literally people come from all over the world to see this place that inspired conservation in the field of ecological restoration. Now we receive people. About 10 years ago, we built the Leopold Center. It's a LEED Platinum building, so state-of-the-art. And the time it was opened 10 years ago is the greenest building in the world, as recognized by the U.S. Green Building Council. But the really kind of fun part is it was built from the trees that Aldo and the family planted in the 30s and 40s. So to keep the health of the trees, we needed to do a thinning. We used those trees to build the center. So when you first come and you learn about Leopold before you go down to the historic site, you're in a building held up by the trees that he planted.
Yeah, that to me is just an amazing thing. Well, this collaboration, before we go to the phones here, this collaboration is really cool. And especially on these large-scale conservation efforts. My Wisconsin Woods, you mentioned that earlier. Talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, so some of the other learning opportunities we have at the Leopold Center are classes on everything from how to run a chainsaw to how to do a management plan and prescribe burn. And My Wisconsin Woods is really a coordinated effort with conservation partners across the state to help engage and support private landowners. And so, again, there are a range of materials. There's a website. There's publications. There are workshops. One of the goals is to get a professional on people's property so they can help do an assessment and help a landowner figure out how to manage for their ecological goals. And then on September 29th, we're having one of our bigger gatherings at the University of Wisconsin Baraboo, or University of Wisconsin Platteville in Baraboo now, I think is the technical name, about managing for oak. And so we'll have experts there, and we have tracks from beginning landowners to expert landowners. You can come, you can learn, you can sign up to win a free chainsaw. But our real goal is to have landowners leave with an action plan. How can they advance their own goals for their own property? And so this is kind of just the most recent effort of My Wisconsin Woods, which is a bigger kind of collaborative effort with partners all across the state.
And I think it's called Oaks in the Driftless, right?
Yeah, so it's kind of focused on the southwest part of the state, but really anybody interested in oak management from anywhere can come and learn a ton.
And oaks are important in that kind of setting.
Yeah, well, oaks are hugely important, economic reasons. You know, red oak is one of a primary product of the state of Wisconsin. And for wildlife, the mast, the acorns, are extremely nutritious and really important for supporting wildlife populations. And then they're just kind of stately, and we have this kind of iconic image of oaks in our head. But our landscapes are changing, and as a result of management or lack thereof, we are losing oaks across their range here, while at the same time, the future kind of climate predictions would suggest that oak should be a stronger component of our forest. So what we're seeing is a transition to red maple and other softwoods in our southern forests. And so if we want to keep oak as a primary element in our landscape, there are some management needs and opportunities.
And they're pretty slow growing.
and that's one of the challenges, right?
They are indeed. So they are a critical component, you're saying, of the system here, ecosystem.
Absolutely. Always have been. And again, their proportion is in decline relative to other species right now.
Chris wanted to know more about the Elder Leopold Center building and how it was built and how energy efficient. Really, you said it was one of the most energy efficient buildings around.
Yeah. So again, we opened it 10 years ago. It was designed with intent of demonstrating what the land ethic, Leopold's seminal idea, might look like in the 21st century. So it was using locally grown materials, i.e. the trees that the family planted. Extremely energy efficient design. So it has thick walls, thick ceiling, good windows so that we could keep the heat out in the summertime and the heat in the wintertime. And then we did deploy a lot of renewable energy technology, so solar voltaic panels and solar hot water panels. We're now, after 10 years, kind of revisiting those performances. Some things did better than we thought. Some things did not as good as we thought, and we're kind of designing a plan for the next 10 years. So, but you can come see all that technology and learn about it at the Leopold Center.
And it's something that people could actually maybe apply to their own situations.
Yeah, the way the building was built, it could be scaled to commercial or to residential. And again, a lot of it is around orientation of the building, investing in the shell. So the building was designed to use 80% less energy than a typical building of its size. Those principles can be applied if you're building a brand new house.
We are talking today with Buddy Hoffacker, who is the board president and executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation, talking with him today about the foundation, getting a little update on what's been going on there. And there's a number of other things that I want to ask him about. Sandhill Cranes, for one thing, the publication that they have called Why Hunt, A Guide for Lovers of Nature, Local Food, and Outdoor Recreation. That's kind of cool, a cool book itself. And again, invite you to join in. We're going to take a little look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with him. But our number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. We'll be back after this quick look at the news and weather. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're taking a look at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Forest management is not just for organizations. Landowners can also promote conservation and create habitat. That's something that the Aldo Leopold Foundation certainly supports and works on. Buddy Huffacker with us today, president, board president and executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. We're talking about ways the foundation is working with public and private landowners. And if you have questions for him, I hope you'll join in. What about questions about managing your land, for example, or about the foundation or what's going on there? Maybe you've done some volunteer work there as well. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. I mentioned volunteers. Buddy, do you work with a, do you have a volunteer group that...
Yeah, we do some. We always have stewardship projects where labor is important and helpful. So you can reach out to our office and let us know that you're interested in helping.
Angelo emailed to ask if you know of any good resources on dry bluff prairies. Seems that it's hard to find information on dry bluff prairies.
Yeah, for those that aren't familiar with dry bluff prairies, they're just what they sound like, usually on steep slopes facing west or south. If anybody wants to go see one, the Spring Green Preserve, owned and managed by the Nature Conservancy outside Spring Green, would give somebody an example. I don't know of any great publications, but two individuals that would be great resources. One would be Rich Henderson at the Prairie Enthusiasts. And the other would be Mike Engel from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and their Partners for Fish and Wildlife program. Both of those are great kind of prairie experts that could probably either answer questions directly or help this individual find some resources.
So Rich Henderson, and he's at...
The Prairie Enthusiasts. It's a not-for-profit organization.
Okay, and there's, I know they are online, and
yeah,
you can find information. And Mike Engel, again, where
same,
would we...
Same, Partners for Fish and Wildlife out of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They have a Madison office, so I'm pretty sure you could get on their webpage and find Mike.
Talk a bit more about the forest management you've been doing on and around the foundation land.
Yeah, so, you know, one thing as we work with private landowners across the state, most people are interested in wildlife. That's often why they own the property. It's for recreational pursuits and viewing or stalking wildlife. And so forest management tools are really great ways to help address and improve wildlife habitat. At the Leopold Foundation, across our property, one thing we recognized was that we were not holding some of the more rare species of wildlife. We were doing a good job of keeping common birds and other wildlife common, which is not bad. We need more of that. But we thought we were uniquely positioned to help a suite of species that are really struggling, and that is savanna and grassland birds. Across the upper Midwest, due to changes in agriculture and habitat and other reasons, grassland birds are one guild of species that are in critical decline. We looked at our property, thought we could really transform our landscape and serve those purposes and actually get it a little bit more back to what it would have looked like when Leopold purchased the property in terms of being more open. And so we have used commercial timber harvest, forestry mowing, and prescribed burning to really reduce the forest canopy and make way for species like red-headed woodpeckers, in some places henslow and grassland sparrows, bobolinks and meadowlarks, and sandhill cranes. And so those are a species, that's a suite of species that we recognize really needed help. We could help. So on the Leopold Foundation property and our partners, the Pines family that owns property next to us, the DNR Pine Island property, a Fish and Wildlife Service, Baraboo River property, we've been managing all towards grassland habitat across 10,000 acres so that we can have a real conservation impact.
Hey, have you had any success?
Well, yes. I'm glad you asked. We've been working with Mike Mossman, or one of the state's leading ornithologists. He comes and does breeding bird surveys every 5 years so that we can monitor our change. And now this year, after we looked, you know, kind of worked hard to open up the habitat, we're seeing the ambassadors come back to us, the red-headed woodpeckers, the meadowlarks, the bobolinks, the sparrows of concern. So it's really exciting that you get the feedback that if you manage the property, if you build it, they actually will come.
Yeah, that is really encouraging to hear. You don't see the red-headed woodpecker very often as an example.
Yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned sandhill cranes, and they're one species that benefit from the work, as you say, and they will be soon congregating along the Wisconsin River near Leopold's famous shack.
Yeah, well, sandhill cranes are one of our conservation success stories. You know, when Leopold purchased his property in the 30s, there were estimated to be 50 breeding pair in the whole state. Now the population for this flyway is approaching 100,000. So it's really amazing success story. It's a result of regulated hunting, improved habitat, and just kind of adaptability by sandhill cranes. But our work in restoring grasslands does help provide breeding habitat for cranes. But the phenomenon that you described, Larry, is really a migration phenomenon that sandhill cranes use. And so this time of year, if you drive through the countryside and you see a wheat field that's been harvested, boom, you start to see cranes. And at first, it's the bachelor flocks, those that didn't mate up. They kind of, you know, find it's the party in Larry's wheat field tonight. And so that's where you see them. But pretty soon, they'll start getting pushed down from the north. And that's from way up in Canada, Minnesota, northern Wisconsin. They'll all start funneling through here. And then what they're looking for as stopover habitat are secure areas to spend the night. And so on the Wisconsin River, we are particularly well-suited in a couple of places. One of those happens to be behind the Leopold Shack, where we have islands with little vegetation. And so the cranes can land there, and the water kind of provides their security system, right? If a coyote's going to get to them, they have to splash through the water. And then there's also security in numbers. And so we'll get 10, 15,000 cranes all huddled up on these islands here. They make a racket, let me tell you. But it is a fascinating wildlife spectacle. And so increasingly, we're offering viewing opportunities for people to come see this wildlife migration phenomenon. And it really it starts to build now, but really mid-November is when it kind of comes to its peak.
Yeah, and so you can... How do people then just get involved in that?
Well, if you go to the Leopold Foundation's website, aldoleopold.org, we have a range of different viewing opportunities. So that's kind of the easiest place to go. But again, you'll start to see them kind of in the fields, which is fun. But we're
seeing a few right now, as a matter of fact.
Yep. But we offer one of the kind of few places where you can actually get up. We have a blind. So you can be out there, you can be within, you know, sometimes 50 yards of them, sometimes 50 feet of them. But you get kind of close up opportunities to see these birds and their beauty and regalia as they kind of honk and strut and poke at each other.
And what an opportunity for just maybe getting out the camera and your phone getting some stills and some recordings, video recordings.
Yeah, even my amateur abilities on my phone, I can get an amazing little minute display. And we do have people of all ranges, people who are just kind of interested in conservation but know little about birds come out. Others are you know, really kind of hardcore birders. We actually also offer for those, you know, photographers have their own interest and demand. So we also have some photography blinds that do let you get up close and personal. You can spend the night out there. And so that's kind of a unique opportunity, recognizing and responding to photographers who, you know, they don't like me with my little phone next to them trying to get blocking their shot. So we got a range of opportunities and activities for people.
It sounds great. Buddy Huffaker, our guest today, board president and executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Fun talking with him. Questions for him either about the foundation or maybe you've got some management kinds of questions you want to ask as well, call in 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. The foundation has a publication called Why Hunt, a guide for lovers of nature, local food, and outdoor recreation. We should certainly talk about that a little bit as well.
Yeah, so again, just like the cranes, and some might find it kind of in stark contrast, you know, there's some debate and uncertainty about whether cranes would or should be hunted in Wisconsin. But at the Leopold Foundation, we're just trying to find more ways for people to connect to nature. And so bird watching is one, hunting is another, and hunting is a strong tradition in Wisconsin. What a lot of people who don't hunt don't understand is what a strong driver hunting has always been and continues to be for conservation. And so if you take all of the hunting activity across the United States, it would be a corporation bigger than Google. Yeah. But locally at the state level, it presents 70% to 80% of our conservation funding. And that's everything from protecting wetlands to managing prairies and savannas. And so we're seeing demographically a decline in hunting, which is going to challenge our ability to conduct and implement conservation across the state. And then also importantly, hunting is an important ecological management tool, as this was the Leopold's field. He was game manager, a population biologist, and recognized that done right and informed by science that hunting could actually improve the health of wildlife populations. So it's strongly regulated, and we have issues like our deer population in the state of Wisconsin and associated issues of chronic wasting disease and Lyme's disease that at this point in time, it's largely believed without hunting, the deer population would continue to rise, and then there are really only bad outcomes that could be associated with that. And then finally, you know, it's amazing to me that sometimes people can read a Sand County Almanac and not even realize that Leopold was a hunter. I mean, this is how he bonded with the natural world, was being out as a young child, as an adult, with his family. Sometimes it was about the harvest. Sometimes it was just about the experience. But this new publication, Why Hunt, is really all about communicating those values and letting readers decide whether or not hunting is a way, an activity that aligns with their conservation ethic. But everybody in the conservation community should be acutely aware of how important hunting is from an ecological and economic driver from a conservation perspective.
Well, let's take some calls. Tiran in Vernon County, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Beaver, the animal that is really not thought of very well in at least my county, Vernon County. I lived on a farm for 15 years, and we had a lot of beaver activity, and then my house burnt down, so I no longer live there. In the meantime, the neighbors basically killed the beaver and destroyed the dam. And also in light of the floods, I mean, I've done a lot of research on beaver, where I've had ex-Army Corps of Engineers say that we should just turn it over to the beaver, the waterways. And, yeah, I'd like to hear what you know about beaver and their assistance in non-flooding and also in regenerating the earth.
And, Taryn, before I let Buddy get in there, we interviewed the author of a book, and the title, Jill, tell me, was it Beaver? It's a fascinating book about beavers and what they can accomplish and about their sort of their ecology, their lives. And you may go back before the end of the show. Jill will pull up the particular day I had that show on, and you can go back and listen online to it if you didn't hear it. But, Buddy, all right, after that, what have you
got
to say?
Well, my guess is what your guest said, and folks would realize, is that there's a lot of thinking that actually the removal of the beaver is one of the ways that the Midwestern landscape was transformed most dramatically, that they used to be a huge influence on the landscape, and through, for all sorts of reasons, their removal has really kind of quote unquote, drained the landscape. So, yes, they're master dam builders. I always find it funny. You find the lovers of beavers and the haters of beavers. Mm-hmm. And some people, you know, can't stand that they build these dams. And then some of those same landowners then build ponds on their property. So, but I'm not particularly well suited to speak to the exact best management practices around beavers. I think it'd be an interesting question with all the flooding about whether more beaver dams, whether that would improve flood capacity or reduce it, Ashley. A hydrologist would have to speak to that. But you can imagine if you're holding more water back up on the landscape, then in these kind of extreme events, there's nowhere for that water to go. So the flood capacity landscape may actually, in a weird way, be diminished with more beaver activity. But again, don't quote me on that. You should ask Scott Craven. Next time Scott Craven's on, ask him about beavers and where they stand. But I think what we do know is they are not nearly as common as they once were on our landscape. And thus, yes, there has been a pretty big transformation of our landscape as a result.
And Tiran, the book title was The Secret Lives of Beavers, and the author was Ben Goldfarb, and I interviewed him on August 8th, Jill reminds me. So The Secret Lives of Beavers by Ben Goldfarb, and if you want to listen back, you can go to our Ideas Network page and listen, go to the Larry Mueller Show, find August 8th, and you can listen to it right online. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Let's give Ethan a chance to join in. Ethan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. So it's really interesting. I'm glad I caught your show today. My parents live out in Blue Mounds, and their house is probably a five-minute walk from Ken Wade. And I believe Ken Wade is very influential in the prairie enthusiasts. And Ken, I believe, has 150 acres that he burns every year to kind of, you know, turn that acreage back into a prairie slowly but surely. And I always wondered why he was so enthusiastic about the prairie, turning it into a prairie. I just couldn't figure out why not leave it as a forest, you know? Your show just totally explained a lot of things, especially, you know, bringing back endangered species. And I just never had an answer, and unfortunately I never had a chance to ask him. So I wanted to thank you so much for kind of contributing to some more of my knowledge.
Oh, Ethan, thanks for calling. Buddy, a comment?
Yeah, well, great feedback. And that is, Blue Mounds is an important area for grassland restoration. Again, that's a kind of landscape goal in that part of the state. Most people would find it interesting, I think, to know that those in the Driftless are familiar with it, that there is more forest cover now than people believe ever to be the case. So that we are losing prairie in some places, and I think it's a site-by-site situation as to whether woodlands is the kind of better or more appropriate cover or prairie. But yes, those that do manage and restore for prairie are often very enthusiastic.
Yeah, and you know Ken Wade?
Yes.
So, Ethan, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And I'm glad you were picking up some things on this. I really appreciate your call. You know, you've got, speaking of information, you've got a magazine called the Leopold Outlook. It comes out, twice a year, doesn't
it? Twice a year, correct.
So what kinds of articles do you feature in that?
Well, one of the things we realized, again, given our kind of unique setting, is we take care of this special place and we hold the rights to Leopold's published and unpublished writings. The magazine is a way for us to share some of Leopold's less familiar writings with readers and friends. And then also, there are so many people that are working and writing, extending Leopold's legacy. It gives us a platform for that. So our most recent issue, which actually just hit mailboxes recently, is all about ecological restoration. So a lot of what we're talking about. And we have a story from Aldo Leopold's grandchild who's restored property in Washington, the state of Washington. We have an article by Kurt Miney about kind of the philosophy and history of ecological restoration. We share some of our work that we are continuing to do. We have Leopold's intro and dedication at the Arboretum when they launched that project here in Madison.
Cool.
So it's kind of both inspirational and often technical publication. There's one story on the role of fire as a management tool. So, you know, we try to cover a lot of ground each time. But again, it's bringing back some of these historic jewels, looking at what's happening contemporarily, and then looking to the future.
And people, I assume this is available to members?
Correct, yeah.
So how does a person become a member?
Again, our website is a great way to do that. You can get online for a small fee. Just tell us you want to be part of the thinking community, and you get the benefits of the magazine, of free or reduced enrollment in different activities that we got going, or you can come see us and sign up at the Leopold Center.
And speaking of activities, just you've got a bunch of things coming up in the last 30 seconds here, 45 seconds. What have you got coming?
September 29th, Oak Workshop in Baraboo at the University of Wisconsin Baraboo. We have some chainsaw safety classes coming up, learn to hunt classes, and continued tours of the Leopold Shack. And then finally, starting mid-November, Crane Congregations, come see the Midwest best wildlife spectacle behind the Leopold Shack.
Yeah, that is. I haven't done that yet, but
I got to get you up there.
I got to get signed up for that. That would be a lot of fun. Well, buddy, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much, and we'll see you probably in a year.
Glad to be here, Larry. Thanks.
Good to have you here. Buddy Huffacker is the board president, executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Fun talking with him about all the things that are going on with the foundation. He'll be back, and we will do this again. Just taking a look to tomorrow. Time to check in with our home improvement experts. We'll talk about what to do if you have water damage and answer your home repair questions. That'll be at 11 on the Ideas Network. But in the meantime, you know what? There's a lot more in store here on the Ideas Network, and I hope you stay with us. Thanks for listening, and stick around.